Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
St. Adams here from the Wednesday Night Wix Show, here to tell you about the new aviation t-shirts available now at warbirdradio.com/deals. Click on the Wright Brothers catalog link. There are lots of great t-shirts to choose from, like the classic World War II Flying Tigers, Tuskegee Airmen, and the ever-popular P-51 Mustang, as well as many other fun aviation designs. Talk to you next Wednesday evening on the Wix Warbird Weekly Live Show, and hopefully you'll be listening wearing your new Aerostyle t-shirt. Visit warbirdradio.com/deals now and check out the all-new Wright Brothers catalog.
Thank you for listening to Warbird Radio. I'm Don Kennedy, proud to be a part of Warbird Radio programming with our Big Band Jump program several times each week. Tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And we're two of the crew members from Warbird Rescue. Call in Thursday nights at 8 Eastern to join the lively discussion of Warbird restoration. Find out how we can put you in touch with a Warbird project in your area. And be sure to visit us online at warbirdrescue.com.
That's warbirdrescue.com.
And we'll talk to you Thursdays at 8 right here on Warbird Radio.
We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
And good evening, everybody. You're listening to another episode of the Warbird Rescue Show, brought to you by our home here on Warbird Radio. I'm your host, Chris, and thanks for tuning in, checking in here from Wind Malone, Indianapolis. And Rob Morelli is the co-host here as well, checking in from frozen tundra, North Dakota, as I always call it. How are you, Rob?
Great, and I'm waiting for spring like you would not believe.
I'm sure you are. Well, guys, thank you again for tuning in. And as you know, every week we talk to somebody that is working on a Warbird project or doing something for the general aviation community or the Warbird community. And tonight we're very honored to have one of the gentlemen that started the whole thing. He's to blame for this whole mess. And that would be Mr. Ed Maloney, founder of the Plains of Fame Air Museum. Mr. Maloney, thank you for coming on this evening.
Well, you're entitled to welcome. Glad to hear from you guys.
Oh, well, we're just honored and thrilled to have you on tonight. Now, we got to start off, we got to ask you the question that we ask everybody every show, and that's, what first got you interested in aviation, specifically Warbirds?
Well, I started building model airplanes when I was 7 years old. My brother was building them before I was, and then got interested in doing that. And then I was in high school, joined Civil Air Patrol, and after the war came concluded, nobody was saving these airplanes out here or anywhere to speak of. The Air Force Museum hasn't opened yet. The Smithsonian, I'm talking about 1951, and had a Quonset hut building from World War One out behind and stacked full of airplanes. That was about it. And nobody out here was interested in saving. We had on the West Coast here the world's largest production center of aeronautics and aeronautica and production of aircraft. And, of course, that's all gone by the wayside now with the high taxes in the state of California. But anyway, I got interested in saving in some of these because I thought they should be saved for future generations. And that's how it got started in the late 40s. I started collecting, and we opened our museum in Claremont, California in January 1957. And it's been a real interesting occupant ever since. We've got about 150 airplanes in our collection now. We have two museums, one in Arizona at Grand Canyon Valley Airport, and then, of course, we have the one at Chino Airport in California at the former Air Force training facility at Cal Aero Field.
Well, speaking of Cal Aero Field, I know that you sort of had a front row seat to a lot of the mass scrappings that took place out there. You know, what were some of the rare airplanes that you saw that kind of just got cut up and nobody saved?
Well, I was in high school at the time, and they had a lot of airplanes there, but unfortunately not many were saved. I went to some of the auctions just to see what was going on, and of course the trainers were popular, the PT-17s, the UC-78 twin-engine trainers, The trainers were popular, but nobody said the fighters or the bombers or the attack bombers, the patrol bombers or PBYs or anything. So I thought, gee, you know, we got to start saving some of these. So I started in, and the first two airplanes I collected were kind of rare. There were two Japanese types, pretty rare. One was an OK-11 Kamikaze, which had been on Okinawa and brought back and used for bond sales. And the other one was a Japanese J-8M1 built by Mitsubishi. It was a copy of the Messerschmitt 163 Comet, and they were building them in Japan, unbeknown to us, till we went into these bases at Yokosuka and found them. And it was quite a shock to our air technical intelligence people to think they were building them. But they were hoping to build these, but they couldn't get them in production fast enough to do us any harm.
Well, that's really interesting that the you know, even by today's standards, the Axis aircraft are not very numerous in numbers, and yet that was some of the first aircraft you went after. That's really interesting that, you know, you went after the most rare first, it seems. I guess that's
what we thought we would, because those are the ones being destroyed, and the Jennies weren't going to be cut up. The Standards or Piper Cubs, you know, they're not going to bother with those. But anything that had metallic content, aluminum, that was in demand, and they were cutting them up right and left. It used to make me sick to go down to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base and see all the airplanes they've been, and they're still cutting them up down there. It's just sick. I tell you, they got a nuclear machine down there that just tears them apart. Stuff hits the ground. They can't even save the radios or the light bulbs or anything. It's just scrap. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's really surprising. You know, they not that it's a warbird, but at a local airport, near where we are, they cut up a 727 using that way you're mentioning, and they didn't even take the cockpit out of it or anything. I mean, they just ground it up right there.
If the military, they're going to cut them.
Yeah.
You can bet on it, and they're doing it every day down there at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. The AMARC outfit's responsible. They're saving the government a lot of money. Of course, what they claim and what happens to aircraft, I don't think they have it. Too much interested in it. But anyway, that's their business. But anyway, we save what we can, and we've gone after the rare airplanes. We've got the second P-26 Boeing Peace Shooter. We've got about 7-8 Japanese airplanes. In fact, we're restoring one right now. It's a airplane dive bomber built by for the Japanese Navy, and built by Aichi, designed by Yokosuka. And the designation was D4Y, and there's only one other one in the world. It's pretty rare. And we're making it so it will taxi at the present time. And it's two-place. And, of course, the Kamikaze version was single. But it's a very interesting airplane. Not too many people remember what the code name was. Judy. The bombers, dive bombers, were named after girls' names. The fighters were built, are probably made after boys' names, like Zeke and Hamp and Frank and George and all that stuff. But anyway, it's Japanese aircraft we've always found very interesting. And we have a number of German aircraft as well, 109, and got a Heinkel 162 that was test flown by Bob Hoover out at Mirok Air Base there in the desert. Got a few other rare birds that I've come across over the years, and we're proud to have them, proud to show them.
One of the greatest displays I think you guys have out there is the Betty display. That is just – I can just stand there and look at that for hours. It's very fascinating. That's got to be the most intact Betty there is around, I would think. I don't know of any one else out there that has one.
It came out of New Guinea, and we kind of set the display up as you go into the New Guinea jungle, and you find a lot of these airplanes have been smashed up or crashed or ground looped or whatever. And so that's what a setup we did. We have a jungle backdrop for it. And, I think it's the only complete Betty on display, as far as I know, in the world. There is a fuselage in Japan that a gentleman is building, has finished the front section, and I think he has an original rear section, but I don't know what he's going to do for wings. But you never know what's ever out there in the ocean or the rest of it. But it's an interesting airplane. It was a very fast airplane, but like most Japanese airplanes, they didn't believe in putting any armament for the pilot or any self-sealing fuel tanks. It was only during the latter days of World War II that they had those things on a few fighters.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see those things up close, especially like, for example, the Betty. You know, you're really looking at history. I mean, that's you know, basically untouched from you know, from its days in combat. It's fascinating to see. When you were starting, I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
That's all right. Go ahead.
I was going to say when you were starting, you know, the museum. You first started collecting aircraft. Was there one airplane that you said I just have to get my hands on it? Or was there one that you just had a goal of obtaining?
Well, naturally, we were searching for all kinds of the rare airplanes we could find. We have an original World War I Henryo HD-1 French fighter, and it was a personal airplane of a third-ranking French ace, Charles Nungesser. He brought it to this country to barnstorm, and he also did the first aviation film back at Roosevelt Field in 1925 called Sky Raider, and he flew the airplane, and after the film was completed, he used to stunt over the theater. It was being shown in the various cities across the country and attract a crowd to see have him come out and see the movie. But I've been trying to get a copy of that, but I guess it's on that film, that nitrate film, that just doesn't last. I haven't been able to anything. But we have the original Henryo. And the one reason we had, I remember as a kid going to some of these Hell's Angels and Men with Wings, World War I movies, and they used to rent this from the owner and put in the foyer. The first time I think it was done that way, when Howard Hughes had the premiere of Hell's Angels at Grumman's Chinese, I've got a picture of it being hung up in the entrance as you go into the theater. And, of course, the theater I saw it in was the Fox Theater in Pomona, California, which they had in the lobby there. And, boy, that was quite an attraction. Original World War I airplane, you know, there's a lot of replicas, but originals are pretty hard to find.
Oh, yeah, the real deal is, yeah, pretty rare. Now, speaking of some of the earlier types of aircraft, I know that you guys also have a Stearman that's been just about everywhere, I think, just about every movie out there. That's quite the movie star.
Well, that's kind of a good movie, all right.
Oh, yeah.
And we give rides in it, and excuse me, but no, a Stearman's very popular. They used them here as trainers during World War II, and then halfway through the war, they decided to also include BT-13s and make it a basic training field as well. And those airplanes we used to see fly around the valley here for years, and there's still a lot of both airplanes around, probably more Stearmans than BT-13s. Most of the crop dusters latched onto them for the engines, and anyway, they're both interesting and well-made airplanes.
Oh, definitely popular still. How is the progress on the B-17 restoration, and where are you guys with that? That's a movie star as well, that airplane.
Well, yeah, it was a star of 12 O'Clock High in the TV series, and it's under restoration still. We have volunteers working on it, and it's parked out in front of the museum, and it's a very good attraction. When we first got it surplus, it was flyable, and we've used to fly it to most of the military air shows out here in the West. We even took it back east one time, and lieutenants. And then we had to park it because we don't have a large staff, but we wanted to restore some of our fighters. And then, we decided here several years ago to start restoration on it, and we hope to put it back in the air eventually. But like everything else today, everything's gone up in price, the engines, propeller overhauls, starters, generators, the whole nine yards. So little by little, we're getting there, but it would be nice to see it. It's called Piccadilly Lily, and that, of course, was the star airplane of 12 O'Clock High TV series, and it was a very good airplane and to fly and to fly in. And, of course, there's a number of the museums now that bought Explorators and converted them back with the turrets, and they make tours around the United States, which is really great to do. Brings out a lot of the veterans and so forth, and people like to fly into it too.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the turnout. We had Sentimental Journey come out to our airport, and it was just amazing to see the amount of not just B-17 veterans, but you know, all the veterans that would turn out to see the airplane and hear some of those stories. Right. That really is a great thing those guys do, touring the country with the 17.
Yeah, it is. It really does. Keeps it active and keeps the airplane active. And so it's a good thing. It's nice to see them fly.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
We do have, by the way, a flying museum. We were one of the first to have a flying museum. We have probably 20, 23, 24 airplanes that we fly, starting with the Northrop N9M Flying Wing. It's an original one, four built. These were prototypes, so Northrop could get the contract to build the B-35 and the B-49. Anyway, we've been flying that since, the early 80s, and it's really a well-made airplane that was built during the war, and everything experimental, it has a little metal in it, but most of it's wood. They made them build them out of wood first and then proof of contract, and then they got the contract to go ahead and build the big ones, which were all metal. But it's a very interesting airplane to see fly in our air show. Our air show, by the way, is May 5 and 6 this year at Chino Airport, Calero Field. If any of your audience would like to come out and see it, I think you'll enjoy your show. We've been doing them since 1972, and we fly quite a few of our aircraft. This year, we're kind of concentrating on the year 1942, the year of some defeats and some winnings, like at Midway and so forth. There's a lot of battles that took place during that period.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about your museum is, they're working warbirds. They're very much, you know, when you go out there and see them, it's not just a museum. It's a museum, but there's work going on, and there's drip pans under the planes, and you're seeing live action being taken on the aircraft. And while you're there, you know, I had the pleasure of visiting the Planes of Fame in Chino with Zach in August, end of August. And while we're there, there's two P-40s sitting there running, you know, and you're like, wow, this is this is fantastic. You know, where else are you going to go and see this? Just a normal day at Planes of Fame, you know. But
we started in December of 1991, also what we call First Saturday Events. And it pertains in the history, giving history to a lot of the youngsters and getting a lot of the veterans that flew these airplanes, and then we try to fly the airplane after the pilots and the mechanics talk about them and what they did during the war, and then fly the actual airplane there. We've had Doolittle Raiders out and some of the original Flying Tigers. Unfortunately, we're losing so many of these people now. It's getting more difficult, but we've been doing it since that time, and of course, it's caught on to a lot of the museums out here, and it's a good educational thing to do. Not that they're all flying museums, but give the history lessons, get the pilots and mechanics to talk about them, the younger generation. World War II is passed on, and we need to keep it in the forefront of American public, I believe, because it was a great war, and we were very fortunate to win it.
Absolutely, there's a lot of sacrifice that won that war, and unfortunately, it's not really been picked up in the history books much these days. And,
if you put for World War II, what is it, about two pages now?
Yeah.
If you're lucky to find it.
Yeah.
And the histories of these pilots, and Butch O'Hare and Bud Meherrins, and oh gosh, and just, you know, there's so many Navy, Marine, and Joe Foss. These guys have passed on, and they should be remembered because they're truly heroes just as much as we had in Revolutionary and Civil Wars.
Well,
and we're losing so many of them.
You touched on a very valid point. A friend of mine works at O'Hare Airport, and he had no idea that it was named after a World War II fighter pilot or the whole story that went behind it. And
right. That's
shocking, you know, that you're there. I mean, and you're looking at
it. You got O'Hare Field up in Chicago, you know, used to Park Ridge, and they do need to name them. They've got a Rickenbacker Air Force Base, or did have in Ohio, and they named a lot of them, the Air Force and the Navy, too. But they need to keep that memory going instead of shoving it under the table, because a lot of sacrifices made.
Absolutely. Now, back at the Planes of Fame, are you guys working on building a memorial for the Korean War as well? Is that correct?
Yes, we have. We're trying to raise some money, and we have already. We have an original MiG-15, an original F-86 F, and we want to put these up as monuments to the Korean War, and we've got some plans that have been drawn up, and we get the right amount of money to put them up. We hope to do that probably out in front of our museum and dedicate it to the Korean War and the pilots and the crew members and the people that took it on, even the infantry that we sacrificed over there to beat those guys. And that we haven't done enough really for the Korean veterans, I feel, and it's our opportunity to do something out here on the coast.
That's terrific. Yeah, I know they call Korea the Forgotten War, but I never thought I'd see it to a point where, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, especially the younger generation, that have no clue what you're talking about. You know, you end up having a reference
match.
Well,
you're right. It was 5 years after World War II, and fortunately we had a lot of World War II fellows that went back into service, and then I remember when they were B-29s were called back to go to Okinawa to top the Chinese Red Tide coming down from North Korea, and we had a lot of bombs that were stored in the Philippines, and boy, they came in handy. We didn't have to send them so many thousands of miles. They were right there in the Philippines.
Already partly there.
It was already partly there, right.
I always thought it was a unique war for the fact that you had propeller-driven and jet-driven aircraft doing combat together. You know, Corsairs.
If you come to our air show, you'll notice that we have an F-86, a Russian MiG-15, and it's a really good act because the planes come across the field a lot faster than the P-40 or P-51. And this is kind of a salute to the Korean War, and those are the two major aircraft, fighter aircraft that we use up around Mig Alley there. Of course, a lot of other aircraft, but those two we felt would, and we've been very fortunate to be able to maintain these aircraft, and they're both great airplanes. It's amazing. Each one is pretty well made. Bud Mahirin always made the comment when he'd come and talk about him. He said that the Mig was like a driving a Ford, and the F-86 was like driving a Cadillac. So it was a good comparison. But our pilots like to change off, and they fly each airplane. The MiG is a lighter airplane. It would go higher. But the F-86 is also a good airplane, too. In fact, we're also flying in the Air Force Heritage Program. We've done that for the last, 10 years. And with the 86 and the P-38 we have, and P-40. And for the Air Force, then I don't think the Navy has a legacy flight anymore, but they started a few years ago, but they couldn't carry it forward. But it's a shame because it gets a lot of the new airplanes. Our fellows that run that, we just got back from Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, attended the conference down there put on by the Air Force, and they flew this year with an F-22. Saw a picture of three F-86s flying with an F-22. It's pretty interesting. F-22 looks like twice the size of an F-86. But anyway, if you go to some of the Air Force bases and shows this year, you'll see when the Heritage flight they have on the East Coast as well as the West Coast.
I can't wait to see that. That's going to be a heck of a show. And the you mentioned a little bit ago there, Bud, and I know the museum had a special relationship with Bud. As a matter of fact, I believe your P-47's in his markings. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And we've been flying that since the 60s, and we've had it in his markings since that time. He was with the 56 Fighter Group, and the airplane was a donated airplane by a city. It had a lot of cities buy the airplane, and then, of course, they donate to the Air Force. And they put the city name on it, and Bud felt that he'd always keep that name on there, and it's a tribute to the city that bought it and the citizens that bought it. And but a lot of times that they would hit the fighter squadrons, and then the pilots would put their girl's name on it and take off the city's name. But anyway, we left it on, and it's quite a famous airplane. It's the only Razorback flying in the United States. There's a number of Bubble D's, and I think CAF has an N they fly. But this is the original Razorback P-47.
Yeah, there's not many Razorbacks left at all. I mean, there's a couple here and there.
None flying that I know of in this country.
Yeah, that's the only flyer I know of, absolutely. Yeah. You know, speaking of Northrop Wings, our very own Rob Morelli worked on a Northrop Wing of a different type. Rob?
Very different type.
Yeah. What do you have any questions about the original Northrop Wing for Mr. Maloney?
Yes, I do. Was that the original wing? Is it pretty stable to fly?
Yes, it's been very stable. And the people wonder, and they say, where's the tail assembly? How does it stay up? And, of course, you have to study it a little bit. When you want to make a turn, there's no rudder, but the rudders are out on the wing tips, and they open up. And if you want to turn to the right, you open up that they look like services out there, and they open it up and they break the air on that side, and so it'll turn. And so that's how you turn it. And we have the pilot that Ron Hackworth, he helped supervise the restoration of it. It's time to get it all, because we had to train the people to actually, we had to mold a lot of the wood, and a lot of people didn't have that knowledge, and so we had to run classes of woodworking. And it worked out real well, and it's amazing to people to see it fly. It has its own sound. It has twin engines. They're special engines built by Franklin. They're 8-engine opposed and two-bladed propellers. And very stable airplane, and we've taken it up as far as San Francisco and then as far as down to Tucson, Arizona. But it does have a lot of range, and there's no drop tanks under it or anything like, so you have to get well. But we've been invited to go back to every air show in the country, but it just doesn't have the range to go to them, so we have to just try to show it at our air show and let the people come to us.
That is one airplane I'd definitely like to see. I used to work on B-2s, and right. that's the father of the technology right there. That's the mother of it all.
Yeah, we took the N9 up there when they rolled out the first B-2 up at Edwards Air Force Base. And then we flew them together, and of course that I saw the original YB-49 fly. It came down to Marchfield, which is over at Riverside, close to us over here, and that was really the ultimate flying wing. I think it was much better looking airplane than the B-2.
Agreed.
It didn't have the stealthiness. It had some stealthiness to it, because one time it was flying up around Oxnard or that base up there, Monterey, and they said, well, when you come by, call us, and so we can take a look at it. Well, they flew over it, and they didn't even know it. Didn't even register on the radar. So it was kind of had stealthiness in the YB-49. And then, of course, the B-2, they have a covering that they put on the airplane to deflect the radar waves.
Yeah, but the top-secret covering.
B-49 was probably the most beautiful flying wing ever made.
Yeah, it's a shame.
You know, you guys touched on something really interesting, and something I kind of noticed when we were out there at Edwards and the whole area out there, is there's so much aviation history in the state of California. I mean, it's so rich in the whole flight test programs, and just so much history is out there that you can almost, like, you're out at Edwards, you can almost feel it. You know, that there's...
Well, you're right. Edwards Air Force has a lot of history there, and they have a museum there. The sad part of it is Lockheed, where we had the Skunk Works, it's all torn down. Douglas Aircraft, where they built the B-19 and DC-3s, it's big parking lots now. You know, cities get, well, we don't need more parking lots. We need more museums. And we have a number of them, but the history is in those. The hangar over there, bank that Howard Hughes kept his airplane, and Amelia Earhart, they tore them down.
Duh.
You know, it's like going out to Liberty, Statue of Liberty, chopping it down, you know.
Yeah, just last summer.
A lot of history, but the people that don't appreciate it and are doing anything about it, they're in a position to. But anyway.
Just last summer we were out at Seattle, and you could see the remnants. They tore the hangars down where they built the B-17s. And
they did. Boeing's doing that. Well, at least they're still in business. They haven't gone out of business. Like Douglas's history, Lockheed was moved, of course, but they had to tear those very historical buildings. Oh my gosh, the Skunk Works are there. It's just a tragedy to see these things go by the wayside.
I've got to give a plug for Plant 42 sitting in Palmdale. The amount of airplanes that have come out of that place that people just have no idea about what goes on there every day.
Well, there's so much security anymore. They keep so covered up, people forget about it. And people move off or retire or whatever, and then they do have a small museum out there, which is nice to see, and it's outside, but it's a nice exhibit there, and excellent good flying weather. That's one reason I think they did put it out there for sure.
Well, fantastic. We're once again, if you're just tuning in tonight, we're talking with the Planes of Fame founder, Ed Maloney, and original Warbird rescuer, and Mr. Maloney, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back to you here after these messages, okay?
Okay.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
St. Adams here from the Wednesday Night Wix Show, here to tell you about the new aviation t-shirts available now at warbirdradio.com/deals. Click on the Wright Brothers catalog link. There are lots of great t-shirts to choose from, like the classic World War II Flying Tigers, Tuskegee Airmen, and the ever-popular P-51 Mustang, as well as many other fun aviation designs. Talk to you next Wednesday evening on the Wix Warbird Weekly Live Show, and hopefully you'll be listening wearing your new Aero-style t-shirt. Visit warbirdradio.com/deals now and check out the all-new Wright Brothers catalog.
Thank you for listening to Warbird Radio. I'm Don Kennedy, proud to be a part of Warbird Radio programming with our Big Man Jump program several times each week. Tune in. Take off with Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And we're two of the crew members from Warbird Rescue. Call in Thursday nights at 8 Eastern to join the lively discussion of Warbird restoration. Find out how we can put you in touch with a Warbird project in your area. And be sure to visit us online at warbirdrescue.com.
That's warbirdrescue.com.
And we'll talk to you Thursdays at 8 right here on Warbird Radio.
We're so close to the Pentagon, sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
And we're back with more of the Warbird Rescue Show. If you're just tuning in, we're listening to some great stories from Mr. Ed Maloney, the Planes of Fame Air Museum founder, and one of the guys that really started saving warbirds that I think while they were just, heck, they were still fighting machines at that time. How does it make you feel when you go out to the hangar now, and to the hangars now, I should say, and you see what the museum has grown into? That has to be a pretty special feeling.
Yes, it is. There's still a lot of work yet we have to do. You can't rest on your laurels, but it is a lot of fun to be out there amongst the airplanes. It keeps you young.
Is there one that
so much
you
to learn?
Is there one that you hold as your favorite? You just hold in a special place?
I really like them all. I like the Japanese. I like the German. We have a few French airplanes. We have a few Russian airplanes. I don't have any particular one. I just like them all. I think they all have their individual characteristics. And over the years, they get a reputation. Some fall by the wayside, but you don't want to be too critical. Like we're restoring a Bell P-59 Air Comet. A lot of people don't even know what that is because it was top secret during the war. And it gets criticism, but you've got to remember, it's like the Wright Brothers airplane. You know,
yeah, nothing compared
to. We hope to make it flyable, and we get it done. But, I mean, it was the first. That was our first jet fighter.
Yeah.
And they built 66 of them, and they had their own fighter group, and there were three or four squadrons of them. And it paved the way for the P-80 and the rest of them to come along that followed.
Yeah, absolutely. Without, like you said, without the P-59, I mean, you've got to start somewhere. You know, and I always love
– somewhere is right, yeah.
I always love the old pictures with the – that when they would move it outside, they had the propeller hung on the nose, the fake propeller.
Yeah, we did that 3 years ago when we first premiered it at our air show. We carved out a propeller and hung it on there and towed it out in front and brought back a lot of memories to some of the people that were up down there. They had General Electric people did the two engines on their English design whittle engines, and they were built in this country and utilized. And the axial flow, however, was much more better than the centrifugal flow, but they had to learn, and that's the way it went.
Absolutely. Now, do you guys utilize a volunteer force out there? Do you guys have volunteers that come out and help keep
yes,
up the
Yes, we do. Yeah, we've had volunteers work here for many, many years and go on. A lot of them have gone on to be airline pilots and service pilots and get out of service and go back to work for the airline. So, yeah, it's been an educational vehicle for many, many people.
Well, Mr. Maloney, once again, we're honored to have you on here tonight. And I think Rob and I would be missing an opportunity if we didn't stop and say a thank you for all of us that are into warbirds for everything that you've done for aviation and preserving history of these amazing airplanes. I think all the whole warbird community would like to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you people. And recently had the warbird conference out here at Chino on first time and on this west coast up here where we are. And nice to see everybody that the interest is still carrying over. But we still have a lot of history to Keaton and to the other younger generation, and because that's our future. And we want to let them know and what has been done and so forth. And I think they enjoy seeing the airplanes fly and partake in air shows and things like that across the country.
Well, you
thank
know,
you again for inviting me.
No, we're honored. You know, that raises a good question. What is the biggest challenge you think to keeping them flying, to keeping warbirds in the air? Is it?
Well, parts are getting to be difficult. Some of them, a lot of the stuff has been cut up and scrapped. The price of the stuff has gone way, way, way high, and that's going to be a detrimental thing. To give you an idea, in 1958, we acquired our first 51. The average price was around $1,500 for the whole airplane. And they had them up at McClellan Air Force Base. There was about 150 of them. And if you bought three or more, you'd get them for at least $850. Well, you can't even buy a propeller blade for that P-51 for those prices. So you get what they are selling for today. It's just, and it's aiming that way. And, it's a good investment, I must say that. Especially the fighters, they have a particular calling to a lot of the people that fly, and which is good, keeps them safe and flyable and so forth. But it's going to be being harder to get the parts for a lot of time, and some of the parts are being made, but that's going to be the thing with ground most airplanes, I would say.
What we gotta ask, going back, what do you think the best deal you ever got on a warbird is? The most amazing find, the mythical P-38 in a barn or something like that. Is there one story of a recovery that sticks out there among all of them?
Well, that P-51 I just mentioned was a pretty good buy for $1,500.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna see those days come back anymore.
Yeah.
But
I'll take two.
What you're looking for is what you go after, and of course, it's getting very hard because there's so many people out there looking for aircraft, and it's not for museums particularly unless it's something to sell. So there aren't as many out there as when I first started. And, of course, I was limited to what I could do. I had to borrow on my home and life insurance policy and so forth. But you do what you can do, and that's about it. I unfortunately lost some airplanes because I just didn't have all the money I'd like to have, but you just do the best you can and keep working at it.
Well, sir, you are certainly someone that, once again, has done a great deal, and we all want to thank you from all of us at Warbird Radio and Warbird Rescue and in the community itself. Thank you for everything you've done to preserve history.
Well, my pleasure, and thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you. We have a link to the Planes of Fame Air Museum that will be in the show story on our website on warbirdradio.com. Click in there and you can donate or volunteer or pick up some cool stuff in their gift shop. Any of these ways help support the museum and keep these historic aircraft in the air where they belong.
Yeah. Yeah, we're open every day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we're located at the Calero Field, known as Chino Airport today. It's about 10 minutes south of Ontario International Airport. That's the closest big airport to come in. And we have approximately about 5 acres of airplanes and hangars and so forth. And then we also have another museum at Grand Canyon at Valley Airport. So I invite all you fellows to come on out. Glad to see you.
Well, thank you.
Bring your walking shoes.
Yeah, bring your walking shoes. That's I've been to both. Let me tell you, both of them are equally as cool. So, getting a chance to climb up in the Connie out front of the Grand Canyon wing was pretty neat as well. And you got
General MacArthur's. That's General MacArthur's baton, by the way. That's the one. He was Hawaii Supreme Commander in Korea. That was his airplane.
Wow.
Then when he retired and was brought back to the U.S., it went to the next one. Nick's commander in Korea, and we were fortunate to be able to save that airplane. We restored it and had an interior put in it by a company back in Ohio, and did a great job. And we have that on display over there, and we have interior, but then go inside the airplane too.
Wow, that is fantastic. Now, is there anything that you'd want to pass on? Any words of wisdom you would pass on to future listeners, younger listeners listening, that are maybe new into the Warbird world and trying to get involved in it?
Well, just keep looking in barns. You never know what you're going to find.
Yeah, that's right.
That's about the only advice I could give you. But save what you can, and the military airplane is the one that gets hit the hardest. They get scrapped and cut up pretty fast on that. But anyway, it's just the way it goes.
Well, sir, thank you again for coming on tonight. And once again, it was an honor.
Okay. Thank you again, fellas. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
Wow. Fascinating stuff for one of the guys that really started this, the whole movement in the Warbird world.
Yeah, he set us all up.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you imagine going out there and saving airplanes back when they were cutting them up right after the war? I mean, that's something that we dream about. And that was one guy, as he said, he's putting his own money out of pocket down to try and save these aircraft. Just a fascinating story to go out there and try and get them.
I think we should go out on a limb and just call him the original Warbird Rescuer.
I think so. Warbird Rescuer number one. That's it.
Hey, Chris, it's your producer here, Matt. I during the show, I couldn't help but listen to all the numbers he was throwing out. And there's a fun little website you can go on, and it'll calculate the inflation rate over the years. And the price of the Mustang, what do you say, $1,500? And they'd give you a deal?
Yeah, $1,500.
They'd give you a deal if you bought three?
Yeah.
So $1,500 loosely. 1945, you figure the inflation rate at around 3.86, it turns out about 19 grand. So, in today's prices,
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Don't you
wish? You can barely get your hands on a Cessna.
You can't. You absolutely can't. So, yeah.
Like anyway. I said, I'll take two.
I'll take two, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take the third and we'll be good.
There you go. Oh, great show, and I really enjoyed it. I've just been sitting here. With my drink in hand, listening to Ed Maloney. What a fun night!
Oh, absolutely.
And you guys have another interview coming up tonight. Now we're not going to broadcast this one live because this is for another show. But you want to divulge a little bit about one of your next guests?
I will. Should I go ahead and tell them who it is, or just give them a hint?
This is going to be a great night for you guys.
Yeah, we're having a good night. We just got done talking to Ed Maloney of the Plains of Fame Air Museum. And we're going to go ahead and give old Jack Roush a call.
Yeah, there you go.
Big doubleheader.
Yeah, talk to Jack, see how he's doing. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm telling you guys, you hit it out of the park this week. Everybody did this week on the station. What a great week. And my hat's off to you guys for getting
couldn't do without you, buddy.
Getting Ed Maloney on the show, and what a fantastic story that was. And this is the perfect show because just kind of a relaxed night, and you did a great job with that, guys. So my hat's off to you. And what's coming up? The F-86 project is. I mean, we're like weeks away from this.
Yeah, I talked to them. As a matter of fact, I talked to him today on the way home from work, and Mr. Martin over at VFW here at Fort Harrison, Indiana. And the biggest thing we need to get our hands on is a canopy. This aircraft did not have a canopy. So if anybody knows whether there's even a junk canopy, we'd be happy to have it. Yeah. But we are. We're going to start on the F-86. It's in the markings of Major Kessler, who flew 100 combat missions over Korea. And went on to fly the F-105 in Vietnam, flew 99 missions over Vietnam. On his 99th mission, he was flying whatever sortie he was on, and his wingman got hit and had to eject. And he went down to try and provide his wingman some cover, and in the process he got hit and spent the rest of the war in the Hanoi Hilton. Yeah. Came home in 1972, and this memorial had already been erected out at Fort Harrison, where his wife worked, named Martha. And his airplane was named, his F-86 was named Martha as well. And so they put the airplane, his markings, he came home and this memorial was out there, and they started running the numbers, and it turns out that this F-86 was one of the airplanes he actually flew in Korea. And it was just dumb luck. I mean, it was just, just dumb luck that he got this airplane. And so this year marks the 40th anniversary of the aircraft being put on display, and we are going to go and clean it up and paint it up and polish it and get it looking good. Major Kessler is going to be coming down for the dedication, the rededication ceremony, and it's a big honor to meet these guys, and that's really what it's about. I mean, preserving the history, teaching, you know, the other generations about it, but, you know, also trying to honor these guys while they're still here, because you know, I can't remember the figure, but every day we lose thousands of just World War II veterans.
Right.
You know, let alone the Korea guys, which weren't a whole heck of a lot younger.
Well, and that's why you guys have a show on here. You know, there's a lot of organizations out there and that do a lot of good stuff for the Warbird guys. But you guys go a step further, where you go out into the communities and you really restore, or you at least, I don't want to say restore in the same sense like what Planes of Fame is doing, but you help preserve the gate guards, these airplanes that are in front of a VFW hall, or wherever they might be, and you get the community involved. And I think that's there's room enough for everyone in this. And I think that's what's so great about what you guys are doing at Warbird Rescue, is you're out there and you're in the trenches. And you know,
well, thanks, man.
It might be the Huey down the street, but it's their Huey down the street, and it might be the only Huey that these people see. And in this case, it's an F-86. It was a C-47 last season, and this season it's the. You know, it's the F-86 and the B-17, the ongoing B-17 project.
We actually have some B-17 news.
So, good stuff.
Our B-17 tail stinger. And by the way, you know, let me touch on one of the things that we really try to get people interested in is there's a reason, whether that UE or the F-86 or the tank or whatever is in your hometown, right. You know, there's a reason it was put there. And it's interesting if you go and research, why is that there? You know, you may stumble upon a local hometown hero that's still with us. Just as we did with Major Kessler. You know, that airplane was put there for a reason, and what greater way to, you know, pay them a tribute than to, you know, bring back the glory to this airplane that was put there.
Well, we got to find a canopy, that's for sure.
That is
made out of, molded aluminum or something, isn't it?
It was just sort of aluminum, something they put on there to keep the weather out, yeah.
Right.
And we definitely need to get that. Now, on the B-17 front, we do have some exciting news. the cheek window... the pilot side cheek window on B-17s post-war, we don't know exactly why, but a lot of B-17s were missing them, and a lot of them are still missing them. It's a rare piece. Rob and I were lucky enough to discover one in the dirt in a shed. And
At an unknown museum.
Yes. And it was, as Rob said, an original. It wasn't a replica. We went on and talked to the museum, and they agreed to go ahead and loan it out to get copied. The National World War II Museum is in the process of a B-17 restoration, headed up by Bruce Orris. And Bruce said, hey, give it to me, and we'll... You know, I'll get the molds made, and because he needs one, and he said, while we're at it, let's see who else can need one. And looks like about 4 to 5 B-17s, including the Planes of Fame, is going to be getting a cheek window made off of our copy or off of our original. So we're gonna see some B-17s get a little bit more accurate, a little bit more equipment in there. And the other thing we're doing is the tail stinger off of Miss Liberty Bell. Is now currently down with the Mighty 8th Air Force Museum in Savannah, Georgia, and they are copying it because they did not have his tail stinger. So they're going to take ours apart and make one from scratch for themselves, and in the process, restore our turret. And so it's a win-win. They get a turret that looks complete, and we get ours corrosion-free back.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's cool to see some of these museums working together.
And, it's amazing with that Cheyenne style tail turret. There are no drawings out there, so this is about the only way to really do it accurately. If you don't have one, is to copy another one.
That's right. Yeah, good work. You got a quick caller here. You want to take it?
Sure. Caller, you're on. How are you? And where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Gerald from Riverside.
Hey, Gerald, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Hey, I think it was great that you finally got Ed Maloney on.
Oh, well, thanks. We figured, you know, we thought of you. We thought you'd be listening tonight. Thank you.
I listened up to about 5:30.
Yeah, no problem. That that was we took a commercial break and came back and just talked to him a little bit more. I'm sure we could sit here and pick his brain all night. The amount of stories that he probably has. Definitely. Thanks for calling in tonight, Jerry. Hey, by the way, we have a package heading your way, so you should be looking for that.
And, Chris, one quick question. Hey, when are we going to fly on Flight Simulator?
You know what? I'm ready. I think this weekend I'll be around. We need to do that. I have my EC3 is calling me.
Yeah, because I have a MiG-17 that I downloaded a few days ago, and I need someone to chase.
Oh.
So I was thinking of you and your Thunder Chief.
Sounds good. We'll give it a run this weekend. I'll shoot you an email. We'll try it out.
Right.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for calling, buddy.
You and the See Buffalo later, Airways guys. I swear, man, you guys are on Flight Simulator more than you're out at the airport.
Airways, guys, that's right. We that's right. Got to go on there.
All right, so I'm gonna throw the gauntlet down now. The Buffalo guys are gonna get a lot of speed up now with Weather Channel. We got to go out there before they get famous.
Yes,
really, really, really crazy famous. I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to do it anytime.
I'm ready. They said they're ready for us.
I think the Rampy Challenge is on. And
I believe so. I think the Warbird Radio Rampy Challenge with Buffalo Airways would be a good thing.
I think that I think Chris is going to win.
I don't know. I've got more installation.
I'm climatized. Yeah, I'm ready.
Rob, you don't stand a chance. Our polar bear buddy is going to win.
I was already a Rampy, too, to keep that in mind.
I know. Chris is going to show up in shorts. It'll be 40 below, and he'll say, you guys cold?
Yeah,
I'm thinking
yeah.
about taking my jacket off.
I'm going to show up on a 40-40-40 day. That's
40-40-40,
so.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm down for this challenge.
I'm telling you. When he told me that, when you asked him, he said, well, how do you clean up an oil spill out there? And he said, oh, you just wait a few minutes and roll it up. Put it in your pocket.
Awesome. That is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be fun. So Buffalo Airways... I think the gauntlet has been thrown. I don't know. You guys tell me when we're going, and we'll go.
I'm ready. I want to do it in the fall, though, because I want to be out
January.
There. January. Yeah. Well, you know, about January.
Let's go in March.
Yeah, let's go maybe like October.
No sunlight.
Yeah.
40 below and 40 mile an hour. I'm ready. Let's
Fine,
do it.
C-46s.
But I want to go to the North Pole. How cool would that be? Can we do that?
That would be amazing. That would be
awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Say I've been there.
There you go. We'll figure it out. I predict I'll make it about 5 minutes. I feel like, you know, Mikey's got a hot pot of coffee. I think I'll be back. You guys have fun. And then we'll all leave Trey out there.
Well, that's,
we just won't tell him. We'll just go around behind the back. So there you go.
Yeah.
You guys seen Trey?
In true Trey fashion, he would just continue working like, oh, shucks, those guys, they'll be coming back.
He's not here to defend himself, so, oh, well. Great show, guys.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks again for tuning in, and can't wait to go on with our next show.
Yeah, which will be next week.
Yeah. Next week, your time, in 7 minutes, our time.
There you
so.
Go. All right. Do you want to say it? You got to go now because you got to call Jack Roush.
Guys? I got to go call Jack Roush.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. Until next week, huh?
Terrific.
Bye.
All right, guys. See you later. For everybody here at Warbird Rescue, you guys have a good night.
This is the time of night when I get to tell you that Warbird Rescue is a 501c3 based in Indiana. They're going to fire me now. Depends solely on your support through donations. If you want to find out more about them, visit warbirdrescue.com. Stay tuned. There's more great programming here on warbirdradio.com coming up right after this. The MD-500.